Okay, I'm Sarah Reith with KZYX, and I'm here in Nice at the community meeting for the Burned Area Emergency Response Team. Can you introduce yourself?
My name is Jess Clark. I'm from the Forest Service out of Salt Lake City, Utah.
And what is it that your team, the BEAR team, does?
The Forest Service stands up a burned area emergency response team after most large fires to do an emergency assessment of the burned area and see what kind of critical values are at risk because of the burned area, and then to see what kind of threats would exist to those critical values, and then how we can treat for those, that risk, and how we mitigate for that.
And you were only able to assess a portion of the fire. Can you give me an idea of what the boundaries of the portion that's been assessed so far are?
You bet. So because the fire was so big and so active on the north end of the fire, as the BEAR team, we didn't have access to the north end. So we cut it off the bottom 191,000 acres, which in most cases is a giant fire by itself. And that was just honestly less than half of the fire overall. So we assessed the bottom 191,000 acres, and we called that our phase one area, and finished that part up and presented that report to our local leadership. And in the same time frame, we're also assessing phase two, which is the north half right now.
And you mentioned that you were going up Elk Mountain Road, and you were going into Potter Valley, and you mentioned a few of the watersheds. So can you name some of the things that are along the boundary so that people can kind of visualize, like, what specific area is covered by this half? And of course, I feel like we should all know this by now, but we don't.
Well, it's a great question. It's a good question for someone who's local here. I've seen the boundary, and it was cut off logically by watersheds, which are important for our models. And Middle Creek was included in that, Bartlett, other watersheds there. Honestly, I don't know that there is a common landmark, like a road that that is a logical cutoff point there that we used. So watersheds was really the main boundary we used. And even that doesn't make a lot of sense to most people from a landscape perspective, because there's no watershed boundaries on the ground, right? You don't see that. So it's mostly a mapping exercise in that case.
And you were talking about the, I think you said, let me check this. This is why I have editing software. You said that the probability for soil erosion was not very crazy. Can you kind of go into a little bit of detail about what that means?
Yeah, not being crazy was a little bit of a fun way to say it, but not that extreme. We've seen a lot of fires with much more extreme probability of substantial soil erosion than this one so far. The numbers we're seeing are not that out of the ordinary for a fire of this kind of severity. Enough to obviously produce sediment that will go downstream, but not so much that it really alarmed us as way out of the ordinary.
And what about the potential for debris flow?
The models that we used for that came from the USGS, and that one did cause us a little bit of concern, because a lot of segments, by that I mean string segments in the burned area, showed us a high probability of debris flows. As we walked through the fire with our geologists, we weren't seeing that on the ground as much. And so we don't want to discount the models, but we also don't want to discount the on-the-ground experience of what happened there. And so we've reported on that potential for debris flows. We're uncertain as to how that will actually pan out, to be honest with you.
And what happens next? You submit something to Washington, and then you get a response. But what are you expecting to have happen next?
So what the BEAR team's doing is we're making an assessment of the burned area and then prescribing treatments to mitigate some of the risks that are at play now. And the treatments cost money, obviously, to implement. And the forest doesn't necessarily have that in their local budget, so we submit a request up the chain through our Washington office. And within about 5 business days, they review the whole report that we put together and the treatment ideas and the costs that we've estimated, and they approve those, or not in some cases, obviously. They have that authority. And then the forest gets a job code, basically. They're able to actually start billing and paying contractors or local forest employees to start implementing these treatments as soon as possible.
And what are the treatments that you're recommending, and how much do you think they'll cost?
The treatment numbers are, I don't know those numbers. Myself, I wasn't involved in the treatment calculation for the numbers. But it'll, you know, it's less than a million, for example. It's not a substantial amount, but I don't know that exact number, to be honest with you. The main treatments that we're prescribing are mostly roads and trails treatments. So how do we deal with burned tree stumps underneath road and trail treads? Rolling dips and ways to harden roads in the expected event of a debris flow or flood event that happens over the road. So mostly engineering treatments from that perspective. Some weeds treatments, taking care of invasive weeds that might pop up because of the newly disturbed soil that they love. Those are the main kind of treatments that we're prescribing.
And it looked like from one of the graphs you showed during your PowerPoint presentation that not a very large section of the area that's been assessed is considered suitable for treatment. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, it's a great question. One of the main things we want to do typically is do whatever we can to slow soil erosion and flood potential, the water coming off of the mountain. But a lot of cases, the land itself makes that difficult. For example, we don't treat very steep slopes, and that's defined as greater than 60% slope. We found that those are not very effective for treatments. As you put down some kind of covering, ground cover, like mulch or straw or something like that to act as a ground cover, a lot of times on steep slopes, those run off. And so steep slopes and low and unburned severity areas, we don't treat. And so it actually blocked out a lot of sections of this fire for possible treatments because of the land itself and the way the fire burned through it.
And you just mentioned that there's danger in the National Forest right now because the root balls have burned out and could basically be sinkholes. And of course, the weakened trees could easily fall on someone or fall on the road behind them if they go in without a chainsaw. What exact parts of the forest are closed, and is any part of it open?
Yeah, our district ranger addressed that tonight at this meeting where he said the northern half of this forest is completely open. There's an actual map that shows the closure area that's available on the Forest Service, the Mendocino's National Forest website, and that will be the best description of where the forest is closed. County roads are open from what Frank reported tonight, the district ranger. But there is a defined area that's closed, and it's logically closed for right now. As I've hiked through and driven through this fire, there's still burning stumps out there. There's still some flames. There's still activity going on. There's heavy equipment up on the fire right now dealing with suppression still. And that's traffic on mountain roads that's sometimes very dangerous to deal with. And then as you mentioned, these sinkholes, it's not a sinkhole like you'd picture in a city street where all of a sudden it takes your whole car. But they could be multiple feet deep in some cases and wide. And a lot of cases, they're unsuspecting. You don't know they're there until you happen to cross them when it might be too late, you stepped in it. And they could be smoldering hot still. So even though it's just a hole and you step in it, maybe it's a hot hole. And so without the right kind of boots on, for example, you're at danger. So there's a logical reason why the forest is still closed, and it's for public safety at this point.
And you mentioned a really recent change in giving permits to landowners who have to go through National Forest to get to their property. So what do these people or the people who are working for them on their property have to do if they want to get into their properties?
That's a great question. And this came up today. I got a phone call because a local private resident on Forest Service land, a private property owner in there, is elderly. And they're not able to go in and remove some burned over equipment that happened on their property. And so they need a contractor or a tow company or someone else to come do it. But previously, they were restricted. Only the landowner could go up there. And so now they've changed that today because it makes sense to invite the private landowner or a designee to go up there and do that. So the requirement is that the landowner will show up to the district office in Upper Lake and meet with the staff there and get a permit to access their private property. And they can then provide a copy of that to their designee, whether it's a contractor, a tow company, or some other helper, and they can get up there legally. So if they're stopped by law enforcement, they can show that permit. The designee or the landowner can show that permit and have access to the land they're going to visit.
And one more question to end on kind of an optimistic note. You showed us a slide of some vegetation that's coming back through the burn zone. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, this is one of the most exciting things about a fire is it's, and I say that sensitively. I know that there's been a lot of destruction and scary experiences and difficult things people have lived through, no doubt, and I'm aware of that. But it's also a fresh start for parts of the forest, and it cleans out some of the understory that's there, and it provides new opportunities for fresh growth. And we've seen milkweed, we've seen ferns, we've seen oaks, we've seen manzanita, all those kinds of trees and shrubs start sprouting again, which is really an amazing part of nature, is that they have what's called these basal resprouters, where a disturbance happens, and all of a sudden the tree says, oh, time to send up a sucker. And it starts shooting up a new leaf structure, a new plant, basically. It's an amazing thing to witness, and it's happening out there already, even without rain so far on this burned area. So it's exciting for us to see that.
Well, thank you so much for taking the time.
You betcha. Thank you.